At the end of the 19th century, New York City was already being seen as the capital of many things: finance, manufacturing, the arts and food, but also the country's premier destination for sin. In his new book, Island of Vice, Richard Zacks traces Theodore Roosevelt's attempts to clean up the Big Apple during his tenure as police commissioner. It's published by Doubleday, and I'm very pleased to welcome Mr. Zacks to our show.
Thanks for having me.
Now, Theodore Roosevelt was New York City's police commissioner for about 2 years. What was city life like in the late 1890s?
Well, it was unbelievable. I mean, we think of Vegas as some kind of sin city, but most of the things people do in Vegas are legal. In New York, illegal gambling flourished at high-class casinos. There was off-track betting parlors that were illegal. There was lottery, and there was so much prostitution. There was
whole city blocks, brothels.
Basically, NYU campus today was one large brothel. There was
That makes sense.
It was called French Town, and the first question was, how do you want it, French or American? So I don't know if you want specifics, but we can leave it there.
Yeah, but you're saying, well, it was mostly downtown, I would imagine.
Well, actually, the discount disorderly district was where we think of the Lower East Side. I grew up with all the stories of, pickles and push carts and all the rest, and that's all true. But in addition, there were the 50-cent brothels, and there were hundreds upon hundreds of them.
How did the 1890s compare to the more recent bad old days of the 1970s and 80s?
Oh, the 1890s when...
Because there were a lot of drugs and there was prostitution.
Yeah, but it was so widespread because there were more laws forbidding things in the 1890s. I think we've just evolved to legalize a lot of the things. You're right, the drug issue. There were opium dens back then, and people went and... there was also... But cocaine and heroin you could buy in the pharmacy, so you didn't need to buy it illegally.
There were more horses stolen in New York City than in the entire state of Texas or California. So was Manhattan in some ways like a frontier town?
I love that story. We just don't remember that before the automobile engine, horsepower was New York's main way of getting around. There were 60,000 horses. One of the details I love is they produced 30 pounds of horse manure a day. You do the math, that's 1.8 million pounds of horse manure a day that these sanitation guys were sweeping up in the streets. I mean, and what I also love about the horse part of the story is that when they were stolen, they were taken to chop shops, the equivalent of chop shops, and they were dyed. Their coats were dyed a different color and their tails were bobbed. So you had illegal stables all over New York.
So I might very well be riding a horse that of a different color.
Yeah, or that it was Roosevelt's horse and then someone dyed it and you bought it.
So how complicit were the police and the political establishment in some of these criminal activities?
They were completely complicit on the Tammany Hall side. It's just extraordinary, the level. Someone said it was completely a systemized corruption. Basically, you paid for street walking, you paid for a bootblack corner, you paid to keep your push cart in place, you paid for virtually everything.
But hadn't things been improved after Boss Tweed was arrested and sent to prison?
Very briefly. It's the Tammany Hall wound up running a guy named Honest John Kelly, and he gets reelected, and Tammany Hall goes back to doing what it's doing, just under a guy with the nickname Honest John.
That's a great name to have. I mean, you have to suspect anybody who's called Honest John,
yeah,
don't you?
Absolutely. And then I love the nicknames of the year, speaking of nicknames. And they're one of the bagmen for one of the main police captains was named Eddie the Sphinx Glennon because he never said a word.
But now we have this new mayor, William Strong. Was he intent on cleaning things up?
Absolutely. He got elected on the Reform Republican Fusion ticket, and he was obsessed with cleaning things up, but not nearly as obsessed as the man he appointed.
And how did he wind up choosing Teddy Roosevelt to do the job?
Well, he first offered him sanitation, and Roosevelt found it a little beneath his dignity. So he passed
on that.
Especially
with all that manure.
Yeah, I think he was thinking about the manure. He said, I could clean up the contractors, but I think I will wait. I will pass on this job. No, he took police commissioner, and there were four men on the board, and Roosevelt was immediately elected president of the police board.
In retrospect, was his personality well-suited to being police commissioner?
No, absolutely not. He couldn't work with couldn't work on a four-man board. Even though he was president, he had one equal vote, and they needed for a unanimous vote to promote people. And the most one of the most important parts of a board is picking the successors to the commissioner and the, you know, it wasn't called commissioner, the police chief, deputy chief. And Roosevelt got into fights with his fellow commissioner, especially Andrew Parker, but also his fellow Republican, who was the son of Ulysses S. Grant, Frederick Grant. Roosevelt couldn't collaborate.
Fighting over what sorts of things? Tactics or just how far they should
go? It was mostly, what's so ironic is they agreed on the reform, the broad pictures of reform. They were against prostitution, against gambling, against police corruption, all those good things. But they disagreed over which men to promote, and these feuds just snowballed. It was kind of sad in a way.
It's interesting that later another fusion politician, Fiorello LaGuardia, yeah, would also make it his goal to clean up the city. He got rid of burlesque and some other things.
Yeah,
but is it fair to call Roosevelt a moral crusader?
Absolutely, he was a moral crusader. He was so high-minded. I mean, it sounds like a setup for a joke, but he was so high-minded, it was ridiculous, and idealistic and impractical and also energetic. I mean, it's fascinating. It's like dropping an absolute pure crusader into the cesspools and sins of New York and like waiting for the explosion. It was amazing.
Well, he wasn't a teetotaler, was he?
No, he drank, but sparingly. He'd drink 1 to 2 glasses of white wine. He didn't like red wine, didn't like beer, and didn't like hard liquor. He did have an occasional mint julep when he became president. But
There was another person who some people will remember the name of, Charles H. Parkhurst, who also was stirring up public sentiment against vice. Were they working together?
Well, Parkhurst led to Roosevelt, basically. Parkhurst gave a sermon in 1892 that shocked the city. He came straight out and called Tammany rum-soaked, libidinous, lot, perjuring. And Parkhurst expected to be cheered, and instead, the Tammany district attorney brought libel charges against him. So the only way Parkhurst could respond was by proving that all the things he said were true. So he's 50 years old. He's a, you know, very sedentary minister. He hires a 25-year-old wise guy detective, and the two of them explored the brothels and gambling joints of New York City together. It's wild.
My guest is Richard Zacks, who's the author of several nonfiction books, all based on periods of history. This one is called Island of Vice, Theodore Roosevelt's Doomed Quest to Clean Up Sin-Loving New York. It is published by Doubleday. In the past, whatever I've heard about his police commissioner days, they've always been kind of a throw-in when we talked about the larger issues. So do you think there's been an important overlooked period in his life?
I think it is an important overlooked period, only because it leads so clearly. He gave several hundred speeches. He learned to be heckled. He learned to deal with very negative newspaper. I mean, they were merciless. And he got on the front page of the newspaper portrayed as a school kid in short pants with his glasses upside down. I mean, he got much thicker skin. And there was one thing I wanted to tell you. You had Rodney King previously. Roosevelt reintroduced the nightstick. And not too many people know that. And the nightstick had been banned as being too rough and too brutal. And he brought back the 24-inch, 1 5/8-inch thick baton that we saw for about a century. I grew up in the city, and that's my clearest image at the waist of the cops is that stick.
I always thought it came out of the shillelagh.
There was a baton that was like 15 inches long. This one is just brutal, but it was Irish. That's a good point.
Now, the newspapers weren't always rough on him. Initially, didn't they support him? New York had a lot of newspapers. One paper ran a cartoon of him dressed as a cowboy lassoing sleeping cops.
Yeah, he had 5 weeks of an absolute glorious honeymoon period.
Only 5 weeks? Then what happened?
I hate to say it. His midnight rambles were incredibly popular. I mean, here's this guy who's 5'8", 8 inches tall. He's walking around with Jacob Riis, a muckraking photojournalist who's 5'4", 5'5". They both have little mustaches and spectacles on, and they are confronting these massive, mostly Irish cops. And the public loved it at first. They thought, here's a guy who's fearless. But one of the things he did 5 weeks into the job was he enforced the law against drinking on Sundays in saloons. And he went from incredibly popular to this hated Puritan almost in a week or two.
So we had all these laws against, that would be a blue law, right?
Right.
Some of those blue laws lasted into fairly recent times. But we're talking about gambling, prostitution, drinking at all hours.
Right.
And it was overlooked? It was overlooked by most of the population?
It was. New York was a place where they just, if you were discreet, in fact, even the New York Times defended Sunday drinking, said it's about public decency. And if they will walk in at the side door and do it quietly, that's okay. And they really wanted to distinguish between public and private.
Do you think this has always been a part of the New York City culture? I mean, New Yorkers ignore laws that they still think are stupid. For example, when was the last time you saw someone get ticketed for jaywalking?
Exactly.
We just had Rodney King's fiancée say that she was stunned by trying to drive down the street when somebody was walking down the middle of the street in front of her.
I love that irreverence in New Yorkers. And I think if you try to enforce every law, I mean, imagine if we all got arrested for driving 56 miles an hour. Imagine if, parking more than 12 inches from the curb. I mean, Roosevelt was enforcing litter laws back then. He was enforcing everything he could, and that's not a good model. But on the other hand, you can't have Tammany Hall where everything's for sale either.
You write that the New York of the 1890s was 1,000 cities masquerading as one.
I feel like it was, especially because the majority of the voters in New York were foreign-born, not just of foreign descent. They were born in another country. So we just had these pockets of Syrians, Germans, you know, Italians, Jews. I mean, and then we had the finance world, the art world. We just had so many clusters of overlapping worlds. It was such a dynamic city.
Well, it's still the case.
Yeah.
But we don't have the kind of, well, as you said, some of the laws are no longer enforced. This was a time when there was some pretty outrageous laws. And some of the opponents would cite some of them, wouldn't they?
Well, yeah, it was great. It was when they were mad at Roosevelt, they went and dug up every law that was still on the books that was going to make his life miserable. There was a law against having a deck of cards in a college because it was like an anti-gambling law and students should study, right? So can you imagine, I was just thinking, if Roosevelt was alive today, he would have to go to Fordham or St. John's and tell him to stop drinking beer. Can you imagine if someone today tried to stop all the beer drinking on every campus?
There was also a law that that didn't allow flying a kite south of 14th Street.
That was still on the books.
And then there was and why would that have been?
I was just amazed. I guess you're supposed to – it's a business district, so you're not supposed to waste time. I don't know.
And you're prohibited against playing baseball within 2 miles of any church service.
Well, the Sunday laws, people don't realize there was no theater or baseball attendance. You weren't allowed to have professional, entertainment on Sundays. We were still very much many Sabbath laws still on the books. You couldn't sell food after 10 a.m. You couldn't get a haircut after 1 p.m.
What do we know what his personal thoughts were on some of these things? Didn't his brother die of alcoholism?
His brother did die. He died in August of 1894, and Roosevelt gets this job in May of 1895. And very few biographers have pointed out the connection. I don't see how it couldn't have had an impact on his decision making.
Now, many of the city parts of New York have been transformed. The Lower East Side is now home to high-end restaurants and doggy daycares. Times Square, yeah. Not all that long ago, was a place where you could find drug addicts. Right. There were a lot of porn theaters. Now it's a family-friendly tourist attraction. And what seems to have cleaned up the city was not a strong police commissioner, but the desire to make more money.
I think that, and I also think that we've legalized. I think New York has won in a way. The New Yorkers have won because we've legalized a lot of the behavior that used to be illegal. The off-track betting became legal. Casinos nearby are legal. Lottery is now legal. So many things are legal.
Your subtitle is Theodore Roosevelt's Doomed Quest to Clean Up New York, which gives away what happened. Did he change?
I voted against Doomed. I lost.
Did he change the way the city operated, at least a little bit?
I think he was an inspiration to the people that wanted to see somebody mount a crusade. And I think all the people who love to think of New York as the Sodom of the United States were their dreams came true.
But so sin won.
Sin won. He inspired some of the police officers, but sin won.
And is that why he only lasted 2 years as commissioner?
He barely got out of this town intact. I mean, he was so disliked by the end of his administration. And then he barely got the job in as the assistant secretary of the Navy down in D.C. And his career was sort of on life support. And then Cuba happens and he charges up that hill and everything changes.
And just a few years later,
he's
president of the United States.
I love the one punchline, though. He never won a majority vote in New York City again after being police commissioner.
Do you think that his time as police commissioner informed him, his behavior as president?
Well, I'd like to think that he learned the impracticality of bitter feuds, of endless newspaper squabbles, of all these kind of things. But part of me thinks he just had better advisors nearby to sort of control him a little bit.
Didn't he want to have a red light district?
No, he was actually opposed. But there were several very prominent people of that era who did believe in a red light district.
And we've never had it here.
No. No. Well, de facto, maybe.
Richard Zaks will be giving a talk and signing books at the Theodore Roosevelt Birthplace and Museum on Saturday, May 12th at noon. Where is that located?
20th Street, just off 5th Avenue and Broadway.
And then on Thursday, June 21st at 6:30 at the Mid-Manhattan Library on 5th Avenue. The book, Island of Vice, Theodore Roosevelt's Doomed Quest to Clean Up Sin-Loving New York. What would you have used instead of doomed?
I just think Quest implies that he didn't totally succeed, and then it's exciting. All the TR guys can go for it, and you don't need to sort of give away. You know.
The book is published by Doubleday. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks a lot. It was fun.